Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
The Survivor Specialist Phil and Blake are back, and today we are digging deeper into episode number 2 of Survivor 49. We are joined today by Wes from Once Upon an Island as we dig deeper into journey tweaks, tribe disadvantages, and whatever else we want to talk about here. Wes, it has been a very long time since you've been on this channel. I did a little bit of voiceover for your channel for one or two episodes over the summer. You have not been on here, I don't think, since we did the Winning Survivor series after 40.
Yeah. That was
welcome back.
That was before 41 after 40, and by then you were like, I'm done talking about I'm done talking about Tony's game on 40. Yeah. But it has been like 5-6 years since then, and maybe we'll do it again next summer. Maybe we'll update that, talk about every winner from 1 through 50. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, wink, wink. Anybody who's wondering if that's potentially coming. Yeah. Blake, I didn't get to hear your thoughts about last night. So welcome to the podcast. Great. I like to turn it over to you first so that then Wes over here can just tell you where you're wrong or right, you know?
You're wrong about that. I'm not going to tell him anything like that.
There you go. So I've already been wrong once, Blake. You're up.
I think what's interesting is pretty much everyone got to what I thought right away when I looked at like the discussion, episode discussions on Reddit or Twitter. It's like, if you show three tribes with a 4-2 split, there's not much diversity of like, okay, who are the four on this tribe? Mm-hmm. They've already voted out Nicole, and then Annie's probably toast, but we're going to try and make, or we're not even going to pretend Annie has a chance. And then we know who the four on red are, and now we know who the four on yellow are. And that's our storyline three times. Don't you feel like you got to know everybody? And you're like, I think it's one of those things where you're like, am I going to complain about everything for the rest of my life? Because I think the people on the show would be like, bro, we gave you more tribe time. We didn't take away votes. We didn't have you focus on people's backstories. We gave you more tribal dynamics. And I think this season, it feels like everybody's very good at the game or very aware of the game. That's to be said of, are they good or are they just aware of a 4-2 split is a good way to get you to probably when we swap. As long as you're not the disaster tribe, just figure out the three other ones. And if you can do what D did on her season, this is the way to re-before your way all the way to the end of like, if you do get, somebody broke it down so succinctly. I was like, holy crap. That is what I would show new players of like, set up your four alliance. If you guys do get to emerge with more than your four, vote out the other two to show people that you're willing to compromise. And then by the time they get too far in, it's too late. R4 is dominant at 8 or 7, and then try to be the one who doesn't get backstabbed, and then you're golden for the win. And I was like, okay, like, yes, it takes someone of D's caliber to do that, but I feel like there's a few people, like, our winner is in one of those four alliances. Of like one of those three alliances of four.
Yeah.
So we can narrow down our winner to one of those 12 people. That's Edgic in a nutshell. But I think that's even your grandma watching with you can understand these people are in a good position. This is what you're supposed to get from that episode.
Jawan's not in the Red Alliance.
He's not.
So you're incorrect because Jawan has to win the season. Yeah. But
last week, Jawan thought he was in though. He was like, we were looking for our fourth. And then this week they just kind of dropped that. They're like, nope, that's not happening.
Jawan's gotten such a weird edit. The fact that they started off like that and they said he's the one who's going to go search for the fourth, and then they turn around and now he's seemingly sixth on his tribe.
Yeah, they didn't even pick up from that. They just kind of like cliffhang, then they're like, he's replaced, I guess.
He's out. He's yeah. out.
If Blake, someone said Uncle Jeff three times in 20 minutes, I would also be like, he's six. Get him out of here.
That's the type of bitterness we need from Blake. Blake, to answer your question that you posed earlier that may or may not have been rhetorical, will I just complain about everything until the end of time? It's a resounding yes. That is for anybody who's gotten Blake's personality over the last three seasons, that is a hell yeah. Wes, what did you take away from last night?
Last night I thought it was a better episode than the premiere. I thought the premiere was just overly long. I think unless it's a returning season, the premiere should be in like the 90 minutes with commercials, no longer. I don't like when it's 2 hours. It was just, But last night I liked, of course, the 90 minutes we have learned, I believe personally, it's great for normal episodes. But really what sold me on it was the journey being probably the best journey ever. Had they been doing this kind of journey from 41, I think we would be harping on journeys way less. We may harp on the frequency of them, but we wouldn't be commenting about how much they suck, I guess. They're like, they happen too often, but like they're okay. Like it was an actual challenge. There was a decision to be made. You didn't have to lose your vote. Like if you lost challenge, you didn't lose your vote as well, which is what they would have done any previous journey. You lost, you lose your vote. Nope. The penalty was just you just don't get the reward at the end. Like that's nice. And then the reward was Jawan, without anyone knowing, got a choice. Jawan could have gone back to his tribe and been like, well, guys, I won, so I got a tribe disadvantage for the other tribes. We get to pick which tribe. He didn't have to tell them that he had a choice on the stolen vote. He chose to. That was his choice. But he didn't have to do that. Like, Survivor didn't force his hand by making the other two people aware of what the choice was. So I felt like there was a lot more choice. There was a social game there. Like, we didn't really get as to why, you know, two people lost the challenge. It was just kind of like, I guess they were evenly shooting. It was like, I'm aiming for Matt, or I'm aiming for, we didn't get any of that. But I think overall the journey was, had we been doing this from 41, I think the journey would not be complained about personally.
And yeah, when I was talking to Will about it last night, his biggest complaint was what you just said, where we weren't really getting into their heads. It was just, we're just going to shoot at the other people because ultimately this is a targeting game and there's only two people to target. So we're going to go that route. But I felt like this was such a massive improvement over what we've seen. And I know I've been heckled a little bit by some people of, wow, you really loved this episode. I didn't love this episode, but I just get excited when Survivor starts moving in the right direction. And I can see that Survivor's trying to move in the right direction. I think this comment from Survivor Archivist is solid. Producers made good improvements and the editors made good out of a pretty boring result. Best episode since the David boot, in my opinion. It probably is, because after the David boot, 48 was hard to watch. And then you got to the premiere of this season and it wasn't very good. So I do think that that is a good comment right there. And, you know, I know, Blake, you were talking about it's a 4-2, it's a 4-2, it's a 4-2. We know who's going to go home. Survivor was at its best when the end result wasn't the entirety of the game, when the journey mattered more. Now, maybe this cast, maybe the casting in general, isn't creating the type of drama and chaos that we want to see if we're going to have a full-blown, like, segments dedicated to just camp life. However, they're moving in the right direction. They can't help that it's a boring boot. They can't help that Annie's outnumbered 4-1 on her tribe and that she's going to go home. But what they can help is what we're watching on the journeys. And I agree with you, Wes, that this journey was such a massive improvement to me. And yes, a player could have still lost his vote in the situation, but it would have been from another player choosing which person they wanted to steal it from. And again, when you're having players make choices, they chose to not pile on Jawan early and make it so Jawan could win. So if you lose your vote in this situation, I don't feel as bad for you as I do when Justin or Bianca roll dice and walk away empty handed.
Or just go up to the journey and put your hand in a bag and hope for the best, like they did in 44. Yeah. What was that?
Yeah, so many bad journeys on this show right now. I have a question for both of you, and I want to see what approach you two think Survivor would have taken with this. If Jawan had stolen a vote, the only time we've ever seen steal the votes is when somebody is actually going to steal the vote at the tribal council they are voting at, right? So if I was at tribal council with the three of you, I have a steal a vote. I steal Wes's vote. Wes can't vote for that tribal council. I can vote. I get two votes. That's it. In this situation, if Jawan steals his vote from, let's say, Jake, Jake goes to tribal council. He can't vote. Can he not vote until Jawan uses his steal a vote? Can he not vote until Jawan goes to tribal? Does Jawan have to use the steal a vote the first time he goes to tribal? And could Jake go to four tribal councils? Jawan never goes, so Jawan never technically uses that advantage, and Jake just can't vote. That was something I was very curious about, because it's normally so obvious because it's happening at the tribal council that the advantage is being used.
I mean, I have a quick answer for that. If we're choosing Jake, you are stealing his next vote that he would be using. That's what's represented by the parchment, not his forever right to vote. Mm-hmm. So because it's a parchment paper, here you go. This is Jake's next vote that we would put in the urn for him. You have it.
Okay.
I think Blake's right. You agree with that? The risk of, I think you just steal the one vote, so they just can't vote at one tribal. I'm agreeing with you on the parchment. I think, this is why I think Jawan made the right decision in terms of what he picked. I don't think the way he presented it was right at the challenge, but what he picked was right, because him picking that would mean Jake's like, oh, I lost my vote. That means Jawan caused me to lose. He may not know Jawan has an extra vote, but he'd be like, Jawan caused me to lose my vote. Therefore, I'm mad at Jawan. And while, sure, the entire Yellow Tribe is mad at Jawan, by the merge, they might be over that. You know, they end up winning anyways. They're mad in the moment. They'll get over it. But, like, you took my vote. That feels a little more personal. So I think the right decision was made. I do think, Blake, you're right. It's just the one time.
So what's fascinating about this steal vote is, and I just want to bring this up, let's say they go to the merge. Uli never goes to tribal council, right? They never go. So they get to the merge. Jawan could have a steal a vote that's now just an extra vote. The vote was stolen from the person But that stolen vote now becomes an extra vote because the person he stole it from is voting at the tribal council that Jawan would ultimately use this. So it's weird and it's a little convoluted. And it's something I didn't think about last night, but it definitely just popped into my head today of, wait a second, what would they do? Although I do think, Blake, you hit it right on the head. It's just, it's worth thinking about, right?
Something else I think is worth thinking about, unfortunately, is this new wrinkle instead of a reward challenge. And are we cutting corners even more of a, we're having a thing that does fill out the episode, that is what we need for content, but we're not sending Jeff to the fake reward challenge. It's not a reward challenge that's getting 35 people mic'd up, 35 camera members. It's the most bare bones challenge where people like us could go right later. That was actually really new and interesting. But it feels like such a, how do we eliminate another $8,000 out of our budget per day on the show of like, well, we don't have to pay the cameraman people. And you're just like, I've seen this as an actual challenge with contestants that can't throw or won't get the right ring hang of it, or this person's just bad at throwing. And this is how we're going to be judging people of how to eliminate people. And some of these people before they go are only going to actually maybe participate in one challenge. Like if Christina goes next week, she skipped last challenge. There wasn't a reward challenge. There's only the challenges from the beginning. Like there's less time to prove yourself. There's less time. Jeff's on camera. And you're just like, oh, is this a cool novel concept? Or did we just save another 10 grand for CBS? And we're not going to, what happened on episode 2 of 49? We're going to not remember. It was the coconut throw. Like, yes, it's one of the coolest journeys, but it's not one of the coolest things that's happened.
I think
there's so. Go ahead, Ross. Yeah.
I was kind of thinking while Blake was talking there. I'm like, what if they had done this challenge? It's usually done in the pre-merge. I think this would be a good one for the post-merge, where everyone's doing it, and it is a challenge, but also it's a social game to figure out. It could be for reward, or it could be for immunity, and be like, we've never seen this in the individual game. Why not? Because I think you could tick people off, being like, people are targeting XYZ, especially in the new era where we don't tend to get people really ticked off as much. And it would be nice to see people ticked off personally. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. When David got mad last season, I was like, good, you should be. Like, because you're right.
Yeah.
But you should be mad. And the show's painting him as wrong. And I'm like, I disagree. So
it's good to see when people actually mad. Actually have heart in it, right? When there's conflict. That was what was missing from the premiere of this episode. There was zero conflict in the whole premiere. Yeah. This last episode actually had some conflict. The one thing I will say with this, and reward challenges aren't happening anyway, right? So if the alternative to a reward challenge is this type of journey or watching people turn a wheel or just roll dice, I'm going to take this every single time or do an impossible puzzle that nobody can do. Do we think that it would be better if on the show in the future, they go the route where they make the reward challenges like this, even if it's whether it's in the pre-merge or the post-merge, whatever it is, and the rewards actually do start to become advantages or disadvantages rather than you can go eat a pizza because who cares that they're going to the sanctuary to eat Chinese food at this point? Would it be better if that's how they start to get the advantages in the game, especially in the pre-merge portion when the journeys have run their course? That's why last night was such a breath of fresh air. Is there a way that they can figure this out to tweak it further and get it where this is still putting the reward is the advantage or the disadvantage that can be applied?
I forget. In Cambodia, they did something like this. I forgot if it was for reward or immunity when they had a hero challenge that they called it. So had everyone been present to watch this challenge happen, it would have been the Cambodia Hero Challenge where, like, I forgot who faced off. I think it was Savage. I think
Terry Savage and Jeremy.
Right. And I thought that was a cool challenge. What happened? It was like near sunset. So it was good. It was really interesting lighting. Why can't they do this, but just people are present to watch it? Like, why not? They already got people there filming it. But like you said, they got less people, which is true. And the challenge inherently is simpler. well, why can't the tribes be there to watch it? Mm-hmm. Why can't, I guess, why not? But Jeff isn't there, which Phil did point out. I want to point out, though, if it's not on Mana Island, Phil, Jeff ain't going. If it ain't day one, if it ain't day one, Jeff's not leaving for 25 days on Mana Island. If Jake gets medically evacuated, Jeff has to leave Mana Island. That's the only time. 25 days, he could just stay on the one island. If you look at Google Maps, everybody, that's where all the challenges are. It's where Tribal Council is. That challenge, immunity challenge you did yesterday, is 1 minute by golf cart from Tribal Council and from Jeff's hut. House that he sleeps in. Like, it is so close. It is so, I just went there this summer. It is so close. It's all like right there. So,
cause you were just in Fiji. Yeah. You were just in Fiji. I had seen the pictures and that's, yeah, that's so funny that everything's that
so
close.
I see challenge locations. I know exactly where it's at and how to get there. And that one is,
well, that's only until they go somewhere else and it's not in Fiji anymore.
Yeah. Good one, Blake.
One thing you did say, Phil, let me jump in real quick on, we won a reward challenge. We're going to go eat fish sticks. And then the challenge thing is the
dry fish sticks.
The twist is in the fish sticks or whatever. And we go, oh my gosh, I think it would be interesting to say, like, this is a reward challenge. The winner of the tribe that wins, there's no real reward. It's just you guys get to go on a journey, the six of you or the five of you or the four of you of, we know an advantage is going into the game for the merge time, but now we don't know who's going to get it out of those five. And like, instead of three random people having to like, see you at the merge, should I talk to you more? Well, I don't really know you better than the people at my home. It's five people, like everybody on the new blue, those four blue people won a challenge. It's not Flint. You get your Flint, but it's actually, which one of you is going to take over this idol or this vote steal, and everyone knows it, and can you use it and work together? I think some tribes would be like, great, we're going to work together, and some people would just like break apart.
That's an interesting idea too, because then you can start to get into a prisoner's dilemma type situation with the tribe, right? Where you say, hey, there's five of you in the game. Two of you must choose to do this thing that seems selfish. But if three of you choose it, all three of you get something or lose something or whatever. Like, you can start to get into that and start to play around with it a little bit. And maybe that is more fun because you're watching a real challenge. You're getting a reward, air quotes, and then you're getting a smaller time journey. I don't know. They're willing to do things with the journeys now. So we might as well throw out our ideas because we know that all of their ideas come from us. So, you know.
Yes, they definitely listen to the people who criticize them. They don't just listen to people who praise them. That is correct. Accurate. I look at Survivor social media, I'm like, wow, they really listen to the people who critique this show. That's what I think.
Hey, based on the fact that they are changing up how long people can lose, what do you call it?
Somebody's listening. It's just not social media.
Yeah. I think somebody cares, though. What do you think about that idea that Blake just threw in, Wes?
I think it's solid. Honestly, at this point, changing up things while... I know, Blake, you were saying earlier, it feels like you're just like watching early thinking, okay, they're cutting costs. I kind of wonder with 26 days, I know that the main immunity challenges, they gotta be, don't they like run those with the dream team and they're like practicing with cameras and stuff? So that's probably part, I'm not like trying to like make excuses for Survivor, we should go back to 39 days. But for the 26 days, that's probably why they can't do as many challenges as they do, because they're building challenges, practicing them with camera people there, running through all that. I imagine it's very time intensive. Because they're, even though they have like 10, 15 challenge sites, they do tend to use a lot of them over and over. Though they have more challenge sites. Maybe that's why they have more challenge sites. Because you go back to earlier seasons, they use like 4 or 5, but now they're using like 10. I don't know. I'm just, I'm sitting distracted with Blake's stuff. I was like, yeah, but also, aren't they practicing? So, sorry, I got distracted.
Well, and to go to that, even more than just going to one or two challenge sites, even if they're only doing one, the problem is you need that whole day to actually test out the challenge and then make tweaks if you need to, right? So if you used to do 3-day cycles, immunity challenge would be on the third day. You could test that out on the second day, right? And then on the first day of that cycle, if there's a reward challenge or whatever it is, you had the time to test a reward challenge on day one, run it on day two, test an immunity challenge on day two, run it on day three or something like that. Now you're talking, some of these cycles are a day. Caleb woke up the next morning and was out of the game. Like, it can happen that quickly in Survivor now. And I think that's probably why we're not seeing as many reward challenges, more so than anything else. At this point, with how long the episodes are, they probably wish they could do more reward challenges. And I think that's why the challenge department was having a little bit more fun last night and actually doing stuff, because they're realizing they need to be able to fill the time. And at the end of the day, we've seen every type of archetype you can possibly see on Survivor at this point. It's hard to make people fall in love and care as deeply with the characters as you could back in the first 15, 20 seasons of the show. It's just not as easy to do anymore. So even when you're showing Camp Life, if it's something that feels repetitive, it's something we've seen before, audiences don't have the attention span for it anymore. The diehard fans might love it, but the general audience is going to say, well, that was boring. All we did was watch them fish. I don't want to watch them fish anymore.
I think the thought process too on, oh, the cycling, there's a day cycle. They got to practice the day before. They got to do it the day of and then take down. I think that's something where it's not, can they do it? It's, will they do it? Or is it cost effective to do it? I think we are past the heydays of challenges in this show of like, we used to make, spend 36 days making a maze. So on day 37, they could have a challenge that you will never forget for the rest of your life.
That Guatemala one, I don't know if you guys have seen that like anytime recently. Blake, I'll let you continue. That Guatemala maze was like way overdone. I was like, this, they put way too much effort into this for what they did on the show.
And the Vanuatu
look at it. It's insane.
The Vanuatu maze too, where they go up instead of out. Yeah.
That one was cool.
It's incredible.
Yeah, I agree, though. An epic final challenge, Blake. Like, when they build a maze, it always would be like, this is the final immunity challenge. Like, this is the big one. Or the final four would be one of the final ones in the finale.
Mm-hmm. And so I think there is the, will they, can they, should they, what way do we want to describe this where it's like, I think it is all money after COVID. Unfortunately, that rears its ugly head of like, I don't think I can give Survivor the benefit of the doubt when we're on day 26 and it's over, or whenever it is like, oh, should we have two challenges an episode? Like, clearly that's the best version of Survivor.
Yeah.
And like, there's been seasons where they haven't had two actual challenges for tribes to compete in, like Redemption Island. And rewatching that recently, it is like, no, I'd rather see people that are in the game playing and interacting with each other. I don't want to see people that are out of the game interacting with people in the game watching. And oh, isn't it interesting that Jake and Jawan and Matt had like a little bit of talking? No, it'd be cooler if we had a knockdown drag out challenge of this tribe versus this tribe. Like, I think what's crazy is
a three-way tug of war.
Like, yeah, after 49 seasons, we know what good Survivor is. And when we don't, whenever it's a little bit less than or whatever, and it's not, the Survivor team knows how to make good TV, but it feels like we don't want to spend the money. And that's what that felt like to me, where it's like, I can't even enjoy this. And that's a problem for me, but like it is, we're never going to have a challenge that we'll never forget ever again.
What I think about when you're talking about this is I'd much rather have two tribes with Exile Island than three tribes where they go on these little journeys, because the little journeys, they talk to each other for so little anyway. And yeah, we got to watch them compete this time where Jawan says, I'm outmatched, but now I got to go against Matt and Jake in this type of challenge. This isn't good. But then he ends up winning. But I'd rather see the Exile Island where there's the cross tribe is happening there, and it's, oh, I'm over here, Steven and Taj, what never amounted in token genes, still felt like there was the possibility there. Whereas when these people go on these journeys now, very rarely, we had it in the first episode or the first season that they did these when Shan and Liana had their moment, right? That was the only time we've really seen that on the journeys. The journeys have, for the most part, been nothing burgers and the part of the episode you can fast forward. Now, you can make that argument with rewards that you can fast forward those too. But again, there used to be so much character development in those rewards, whether it was somebody blowing the challenge or blowing past expectations or somebody carrying the team or something like that. You can, it's the show don't tell thing. And Survivor's kind of into this mode of telling is really the only way that they tell the story. And challenges were the way to show, not tell. Last night, I learned a lot more about that Hina tribe than by anything they have said because of their performance in that challenge. They had 20 pounds of coconuts on their back. They had extra keys. Jason absolutely decimated that puzzle. They won anyway, despite the fact that they should have lost. I know a lot more about those six than I do from anything they can say in a confessional. If we had a reward challenge on top of that, that also leads to conversations or, hey, what do we do with this? What do we do with that? I know a lot more. Whereas I do agree that this journey, while it was a lot more exciting than the other journeys we've seen, I don't know anything more about Jake or Matt from this journey. And the only reason I know about more about Juwan is because Juwan won it and was the one who ultimately made the decisions.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think Juwan pulling the, I think it was, ooh, this is something that anybody can watch in this show can see this of Juwan is on the outs of that four that we mentioned earlier, but now because he didn't be selfish or greedy and take the individual, now his tribe is going to be like, great job. We maybe would have lost, even though it doesn't really affect it because they pass blue and yellow passes them. It is a, you got your head in the right place, guy. Like, that's fire. That's super vibes and absolute cinema.
The aura of cinema is immaculate.
Yeah. It's, yeah, us 30-plus-year-olds talking about that now.
Hey, I'm 29.
Okay, my bad, Wes. My bad. Yeah. Gen Z. You give Gen Z vibes big time.
Good. God.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. What? Okay. So let's talk about the tribe disadvantages. Let's jump over to that. So this was the first time that we'd really seen a tribe disadvantage.
Medallion of power, but opposite.
But, and also kind of good.
No, Jeff hates Medallion of power. Don't even mention that.
Mm-hmm. Medallion of power is the most overhated twist in the history of the show.
Watching the
it is dumb, but that's it. What did we think about this disadvantage and where? How extreme do you think they're going to get with these disadvantages? Because I assume this is going to be something they're going to want to test out over and over again, being that Hina won despite having the disadvantage.
I don't know. I think, honestly, when I see stuff leading into a big returnee season, especially after Winners of War, I wonder, how much is this testing for the returnee season? So Edge of Extinction was clearly a test run for the Edge of Extinction on Winners of War. You know, when we had that two-part finale for 47, like, is this a test run for 50? You know, the test running doing a two-part finale, the test running doing tribe disadvantages again. So it's like, how much is this a test run? Like, are these journeys test runs? Like, I don't know. Tribe disadvantages, are we just test running things for 50? Though 49 is a little soon to be test running stuff, but I guess why not? Or a little soon, I mean, a little.
I feel like, I agree. I feel like the test run is, that was kind of the argument I made last night too, was that they're trying to see what they can get away with and make sure that they get the kinks out in this season so that they're not ruining it in 50. Because as we saw in 40, they hadn't gotten the kinks out with fire tokens. Fire tokens.
Do it again, yeah.
So stupid. Yeah. So
I think what zoomed through my head and probably some other people I saw online were like, oh, we've had Disaster Tribe. And this is the 10 seasons of Disaster Tribes. We do know what we're talking about of a tribe loses 3 or 4 times pre-merge. They don't get better. They lost their flint. They lead to, well, when you do this, you're some of the strongest people going in the merge because you've had to ironclad alliance by then, or you get picked off like Emily Flippin did. And I think this is a clear, like, how do we stop having disaster tribes? Instead of balancing the tribes out correctly or making sure we don't have to use our, like, amazing people as, what are they called? Alternates. I'm sure yellow was balanced before 2 alternates came in. I think it's something true. Where, oh, crap.
Now it's overpowered.
Yeah, we need to do something to avoid disaster tribe. And it's a clear thought process that the person wouldn't give the penalty to the disaster tribe because they think they could beat them anyway. Or there's already bad enough happened to them. Like, Juwan literally spells it out for everyone of, we're going to go after the big threat because if we can knock somebody off on yellow, that'll make red even better, not more blue. But if somebody pulled the villain threat of like, no, screw this disaster tribe, y'all see y'all at this again, that would be a like, oh, crap. But they don't cast people that think that way anymore.
Q would have done it, but Q was the best casting choice of the new era.
He was great, but he was never destined to win.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of the people that they're putting on want to win. So sorry.
I think you have the amazing race strategy or an amazing race. It's like, okay, you hit the U-turn after the detour. You go for the team that sucks the worst because you want to make sure that they lose, that they get eliminated. In this case, I think you go, we as a tribe, not me, Juwan, we as a tribe decided to give the disadvantage to the blue tribe. And then you don't explain. Jeff asks why. You're just like, it feels like the best choice for us. Try to keep it as generic as possible. And blue can assume all they want, but you already know they suck and you make sure they lose. And you don't anger the majority of people who are going to be joining you later. And you put it on the tribe. Don't put it on you. Like Juwan, it felt like a Juwan decision from what I saw. You should have put that on the red tribe. Should have, like, the tribe decided this, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I was saying that if they're already going to lose anyway, you don't want to piss off. You don't want to piss people off. Oh, no. Now you're going to take shots at the weakest tribe. There's less of them to worry about when jury time comes. With how the new era format works, they could lose the first four challenges. You're down to final 14. And then they say, okay, we're going to do a tribe swap or a merge or whatever the hell the fake merge thing is called at this point. And now they're all out, or there's one of them on the jury. I mean, Caleb almost didn't make the jury, was saved by a shot in the dark. Had his shot in the dark not worked, Emily Flippin is the only person from the Lulu losers to make it to the merge. And so you have less people to make mad. If they're already a disaster, rub their noses in it. And if they want to hold it against you later on, how many of them are going to be there to hold it against you anyway? Whereas Tina now can turn around and say, this Juwan guy was coming for us. We won anyway. He's a little sketchy. This is the only interaction they've had with Juwan. That's it.
What do you think, Blake?
They don't get
awesome nonsense.
They don't get to watch all his pre stuff like we did. It is something where you're just damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, I think this is, like we said earlier, cooler than just rolling dice and be like, I got a six, or I got too many fires and you got too many skulls, so you're dead. Yeah. This is way more of a, what do you have to say for yourself, Juwan? And you're like, okay, I made the one decision that was
forced
on me. Like, yes, we cast a bunch of people that are, everyone is going to bring the orange slices to their little league game because this is the type of people, and nobody's going to go orange slices. So yeah, I think Juwan's just screwed if he does and screwed if he doesn't. But I could not imagine going after a disaster tribe after, like, if there's a tribe disadvantage again and it gets put on Jake's squad next time, it'll be like, damn, that is harsh.
The problem for Blake is he is the disaster tribe, and that's why he's trying to let everybody know if he ever gets cast on Survivor, don't come for him. He'll lose on his own. He doesn't need any help, right? That's what Blake's looking
at. It is kind of like
Survivor level now, Blake.
Survivor is
not
too hard, but boy, whenever you see those people, like, now you did this whole obstacle course. Some of you guys put 20 pounds of coconuts. Now that you're done and it's time to do the puzzle, crawl up the biggest wall you've ever seen. And it's like, that's at the end? Like, if I ever get on this show, like, I better lose 100 pounds so I don't, like, just full on, like, please lift me up barely, like, no shot. And you're just like, fingers crossed that your team won the one before so you can be on the bench and be like, I'm sure Christina was like, thank God I don't have to do this with 20 pounds of extra coconuts. And it is kind of interesting because when we do the pre-rankings, you're like, I think Christina is going to be not great in pre-merge challenges. And I don't remember how she did at the premiere. She was pretty, but like,
good on the first one. She was paired up with MC, though, who's clearly, like, the best challenger on that tribe.
MC running up that thing by herself to start it off, I was like, I have not just, holy shit, like, mm-hmm. From now on, if there's a tribe pick'em, she's on my tribe. Like, that is such a, we're not letting MC get ninth place. Like, she has to go immediately. Like, screw that.
Well, and you're seeing MC really excel at the challenges, and MC was an alternate who had barely watched the show before coming out there. He had just discovered the show. So you wonder how much of it is, you know, just the regular competitive nature. And I think that's a good thing, right? That's how David was last season. That's how Joe was last season. These were two guys who the game wasn't their life. I know for Joe, he knew it a little bit better because of his sister watching it, but David didn't know that game at all. David had watched like six seasons of Survivor. I don't care what he tries to claim. He watched like six seasons of Survivor. And ultimately, he didn't pick up on the fact that you should try to hide the fact that you're really good at everything. You can be jacked and be not good at challenges. We saw Wardog do it in Edge of Extinction. So when you see these kinds of situations, you see MC killing it and you say, okay, she's not messing around. She did that with the 20 pounds on her back too. Good for her. She killed it. I'm a fan of that though. And I want to watch some people who don't understand the game as well as a Riz God or a Savannah or a Jawan. You need the people who are also very casual. That is what balances the show. Just don't go so extreme where you get to the point of one world where nobody knows what the hell show they're on. That's what you can't do.
Do you have a confessional count handy, Phil?
I do. Of course. Do I have a confessional count?
Did Sage get a confessional this episode?
She did. And guess what? It was about bodily functions.
Yeah.
Which one was
the second time?
Which function was it?
She had
her heart rate speeds up, so she pees. I remember this. It was funny.
It's like,
says you.
It's weird because are you put on the show where you're like, I get we've had I'm super anxious and I look like a sheet without my shirt on. I'm completely out of place. I'm Cochran. And you're like, okay, cool, cool, cool. Is this the female version of that? Of like, you don't know about my hopes and dreams or why I'm on the show or what my motivations are, but we know more about her circulatory system, her like her urinary tract. Like, why do we know all this stuff? And like,
the one of the challenges, she's just gonna let it all loose. Her heart rate's gonna get too much. Mm-hmm. That's what they set you up. So when it happens, you know.
Yeah, like, is that gonna be a funny moment of she peed on somebody by accident and people can't get over that and vote her out immediately?
Here's the situation, right? I have figured it out. This is the post merge of Survivor 49. She is going to be doing an endurance challenge. Her heart rate is going to get up. She's going to need to pee. She's going to try to get down but not be able to find her shoe because Jake will have stolen her shoe. And she's going to pee her pants on national television, and that's going to be the end of Sage.
I know for a fact that people in the past have – of course, that was back when endurance challenges were longer – that they would go during the challenge. So it just doesn't show it. But yeah, in this case,
Amanda was the only one who stepped down because she had to pee. And that was in Fans versus Favorites. She stepped down in the challenge that Parvati convinces Jason he's totally safe. Don't worry, buddy.
I mean, Sage, maybe she wins the million. We all get surprised. And when she does, Jeff's like, bring out the pizza and champagne. And Sage says, bring out a pair of pants.
That's it.
My heart rate went up too high when I walked.
The first millionaire to immediately poop their pants. Some people, what do they say? When you die, the first thing you do is poop. Sage, when she wins $1 million, the first thing she does is poop. So
she just like, give me a pair of pants. They set us up all season for it.
Which this is they did. This is funny and jokey, but like, I think for the rest of her life, or like the next 2 years, or like, is it a decade where? Oh, yeah, I was on Survivor. Anytime you're in the Pacific Northwest and you run into somebody at a grocery store and it's Sage, she goes, I got to go to the bathroom. I'll talk to you in a second. Like, is it everything she talks about where we can't put anything else on because it's all she focused on? It's just something where, like, she seems so quirky. Why does it have to be about
poop jokes,
body stuff?
Yeah. And then she wanted to be the Easter bunny. She wanted to be a mascot. Oh, wasn't good at being a mascot.
True.
And what's so interesting about Sage is she's a veteran, I think, right?
Is she?
She's a veteran.
She's a veteran.
Oh my gosh.
We haven't gotten that personality at all. What was that?
That makes so much sense. I was in the Navy. This all of a sudden, everything just clicked about Sage. Okay. No, that adds up. That's how people talk in the military. But I was like, she wasn't in, so I didn't think about it.
There you go. Well, we haven't gotten, I feel like we haven't. She could be talking about her time in the military, but we're not getting my problem with Sage is, and this isn't Sage as a person, because some people find the Sage stuff very funny. It's weird, it's different, it's quirky, whatever.
Wow.
My problem with the Sage stuff is when they cast Sage, who did they think was going to really relate to her? And when you heard Sage's initial pregame press, I could have told you she was going to be one of the people with the least amount of confessionals on this season. Matthew C. over here somehow put confessional in every episode for her. I didn't have low expectations for Sage, but it's just, it's so weird. It's so different. And that's where I just wonder, where are they? What were they hoping? What was the ceiling for Sage? Right? You get some players, a Jacob Derwin, because Tegwith is going to have him on Monday for Matt Chat. You get a Jacob Derwin. His ceiling is high, even though he ended up hitting his floor on that season and going out in second place. But Sage's ceiling, can Sage ever win Survivor? Probably not. Is she going to be the character that we go to about pee and poop every week? That's probably going to get old to the point where they're not going to do it. She's going to be invisible in some of these episodes, even if she goes far. I don't know. It's just weird. It's just weird. And that's just casting in general in the new era.
She did 10 years in the military, and I'm reading a preseason interview where she said, "I've already peed 20 times today. I had to pee off the side of the boat. Had a really great intimate moment with one of the PAs. It was great." So it sounds like she is talking about a lot, especially if she's not being overdramatic. Who knows? Saying she's already peed 20 times. So maybe it really is. She talked about wanting to see people do an aqua dump, or she wanted to experience one.
That's crazy. Like, imagine you're like, "I just put in my application. This is my 3 Ironmans. My kids, I birthed 5 kids in the last 3 years. I had two sets of twins or something. I'm a super mom. I'm whatever." And like, you're like, there's no way I don't get on the show this time. You get a call back. You're super excited. And now it's time to watch the show. Sage isn't even the alternate. She's on the show. She's the quirky poop person. And you're like, what?
Look, have we had another one?
She's so unique. Like, there's a reason. Okay. I have a big bug up my ass about this, because I've worked in casting where it's don't put in poop stories. Don't put in pee stories. Because everyone goes, "What's the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you?" It's usually one of those. But whether it's a dating show or a competition show, we don't really want to hear about bodily functions. Yes, that may have happened to you. Oh, I'm going to let you tell the story, get your energy up. But we can't really use that in auditions. Like, what else happened to you? And the fact that not only did it probably get her on the show, the fact that we're using major network time of talking about like lowest common denominator stuff, like, it's just something where you're like, is this below Survivor as a brand, or what are we doing? Or is it fun to talk about? And like, then we're talking about it instead of being like, "Nate's a really good strategist. I never expected that from him."
I
like,
relate to Nate though last night.
We're like, "Oh, Sage.
I don't know.
Yeah,
man.
I don't know. Yeah.
Casting
could go either way.
For all Survivor Eternity, it's had question marks. But in the new era, it does have its own different flaws than it did before 39. And the new flaws to me are like, we cast from the same areas over and over, you know. But like, I was not expecting a Sage on the show. Why a Sage on the show? I'm sure there's a reason. They could have her talk about other stuff, but they choose to have her talk about this, which either means A, they think it's hilarious, or B, or also B, it's setting stuff for something. I don't know. I have no idea. It could just be that's funny.
She is making Shannon look like the most straight edge person to ever play Survivor. And she's making Shannon like look like, why is Shannon so normal and not saying anything weird? Why is she
Shannon
so
gets, like, the music when she's praying too? Shannon gets like this music says, "You know, I'll take this very seriously."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I know we talked about the tweaks, the disadvantages. We're talking about the cast. Where's your mind at with this now? Because we're talking about Sage. She got her one confessional. Jason and Christina get nothing in this last challenge. Where's your head at with kind of what they are setting us up for? We've talked a lot about what we think they're setting us up for, but what do you actually think is going to come to fruition? Like, or is some of this just going to be thrown? It's just thrown in there because it's thrown in there.
You're asking me or Blake?
Either one.
Oh, okay.
You go first.
You want this, Blake?
You go first.
All right. Well, I mean, okay, so this episode, I mean, if we're being set for stuff, just strategic stuff. But in terms of like the season, they said act one of a horror episode, a horror movie was last week, which I thought was totally confusing with the saturated, bright Survivor 49, just like the season, the show in general. That doesn't fit. But when I think back to why they chose that, to me, it's, I think it's because Savannah is the monster, the Michael Myers, the Freddy, the Jason, whatever, because she's the only one last week who was not all happy, lucky, go-go all the time. She's like, these people are all about the vibes around here. You know, she had kind of had that villainous edge. She didn't really have that this week, though. Not to my recollection, at least. So it kind of feels like they're setting us up for she's the killer. And right now, she's being quiet. Think Tony Winners at War when he's like, and then later I'm going to sucker punch him. Well, Savannah's going to later gonna stab him in the back, you know, open the shower curtain and like that from Psycho. I think it was Psycho.
Yeah.
I got that right.
It is.
But, you're good. We're talking about Act 1 of a horror movie. Right now, Savannah is the monster. The monster they promised us in Spire 41 and 42, and they had nothing else. It was Savannah the whole time.
The monster in those seasons was the Hourglass. That's the biggest horror villain of all time.
It was Jeff. Jeff was the monster.
Yeah.
The monster was the budget cuts.
It really was.
I like where you're going with that, with Savannah kind of being like the monster and everything like that. I think about these other tribes and I try to figure out what I'm being set up for. Alex's idol now definitely leads to big questions about the setup here. We've heard so much about the bromance of Alex and Jake. They're doing handstands in the water together. Can we do them at the same time? Like, what am I watching? And we see Jeremiah being in a bad spot now. Sophie, Jake says he has two number ones. Well, who knows what that's actually going to amount to? What are we being set up on the blue tribe? And I'm really trying to figure out what we're being set up on the yellow tribe, because the yellow tribe, it feels like the most economical and efficient version of what we've seen from any of the tribes so far, where it is very, we're going here because this is information you need to know that's going to be important. Sophie's mad that they're coming for her. Matt is probably in trouble now. MC is the one stirring the pot. All right, let's move on and never talk to that tribe again. So I don't know. There's some things that I feel like are going to have big payoff. What was that?
So yellow just feels unimportant to the big grand scheme of things.
Yeah, it does. It does.
And did we get any Riz God content at all last night?
One. That was it.
He said things were cinema and fire. He got one confessional. I forgot what it was about. He tried to backflip. Jeff was confused by his backflip.
Right.
And then he did it again. And Jeff's like, okay, that was kind of cool. It's really it.
It actually wasn't a bad move, though, because he backflipped and it didn't allow his body to get awkwardly stuck. So he actually caught up to Nate by backflipping. It's pretty sick.
Yeah. Not much of the Riz God, though, last night. Yeah.
Which I was surprised at after how massive of an edit he had in episode number one, having the hour and a half episodes, you would think they'd want to focus on him a little bit more. I was surprised that we didn't hear more from him and that there was still a big emphasis on his tribe. Juwan with five confessionals, Savannah with five confessionals, Sage talking about Riz God and Sage had the same amount of content last night. I would argue that Sage might've had more.
But Riz God's was more quality.
I don't know. Based on how you laughed about the poop,
we talked about Sage a lot more than we talked about Riz God so far. Yeah,
that's true.
That's the problem.
Riz God had a lot more quality, I guess, across the two episodes at Sage. I think we can all agree on that.
The other thing that I want to I was kind of right, or am I right or wrong so far? I think Alex was the person I was least excited for, and somebody was like, "No, bro. He is going to rock this shit." Currently, he's 0-4. Like,
he has an idol.
He's got an idol and a four-person alliance. What are you talking
he's
about?
0-4 in challenges, bro. Like, what are we talking about?
No, nah, he's cooking.
I think I don't really enjoy his layer of the blue tribe. But it's weird that Jeremiah is like, "I'm in a bad spot, but I'm not going to do anything to fix it." Like, clearly Jeremiah goes next based on what we've heard so far, but then it is like, is there going to be a once in a million snake bite next episode? Or are we supposed to be like, y'all, we would have heard that by now in some kind of like Fijian newspaper of the snakes finally bit someone on Survivor, we've been warning them about this for 15 years.
Does Jake get pulled though? But they only it's like a precautionary pull. Like, oh no, he might have got poison, but we can't check unless we bring him to the hospital.
Will brought this up yesterday because Will's worked on a bunch of seasons out in Fiji. And he said that when it comes to this is the type of snake that you'll know within 10 to 20 minutes if you're going to be good or not.
Oh,
so the fact that Jake is still alive and is kicking, he's fine. I think we're totally good here.
Just imagine though the setup that last week they're like, Jake's like, oh, my dad's losing his vision. By the end of the year, he won't have it. My wife's having a child next week. Next episode or two episodes later, dies because of a snake. Like
that would be if you're talking act one of a horror movie, he's got to be the guy who goes first because he's the one you have the emotional attachment
to. Did Savannah set the snake up?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Savannah's actually
set the snake. She's like, go to the red tribe. with her horror magic or whatever she has.
If she did that shit, she'd be on a legend season in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and she's not that. So let's talk about this though, because we all know, right? You and I, everybody who's listening to our podcast, like if you don't want to know who's on 50, cut out now.
Bruh.
But you should know by this point because we've talked about it. We did a brand steal, we put them in thumbnails. Savannah and Rizgod being on the next season. After episode one, I said, oh man, this is really impacting the edit. Rizgod coming out with 12 confessionals in the first episode, Savannah with 6. Here we go though. This episode, we only get 1 from Rizgod. We still get 5 from Savannah, who gets a pretty big edit, which maybe Savannah's the winner of the season. They would find their way to make sure the winner is getting a big edit. We've seen that before in a lot of other seasons. But were you surprised at all that we took such a step back from Rizgod knowing he's beyond the next season? Because they could easily wrestle hands, both of these people, and just pretend that the rest of the cast does not exist.
Do they want to do that though? I was this season, I guess this is where I want to hear what you think, Blake. Does this season get edited with the thought of what happens in 50, therefore we could set things up for 50, or is this self-contained, don't think about 50 at all?
I think your answer is super clear from it's Survivor 49, but here's pictures of Ceree and Boston Rob.
Yeah.
And
right.
Parvati. And legends,
on 50.
Legends are built every day on Survivor, and now it's time for Jawan's legend to start. And it's like, Jawan, this is a horror movie. Mm-hmm. This is how legends are made. Like, I think they're going for that. So, yes, I think the Survivor community may be treating 49 like a, can we hurry up do this so we can get to 50? It sucks. It really does suck. But like,
sleep on 49. I've heard that somewhere.
Yeah, first time, right?
Was that what they did for 39? And you're just like, okay.
We should have slept on 39.
Like, I still like Nora and Dean from 39. Like, that was a fun season. But like, I was super excited for Winners at War until the whole shutdowns, whatever. Like, that I think that got messed up because we didn't have a cool finale from that. Like, there's a lot of stuff of what happened last time we did a all returner season. So it's an all returner season, and we have to not have our audience wonder why Riz or Savannah made it.
Right.
So one of them, whoever wins, great. If it's one of them, great. We don't have to prove why they got on. But the other person, or maybe both of them that don't win this season, we have to prove why they got on to such a legendary season back to back instead of calling
off two other people.
Yeah, calling Marianne and Omar.
People, like, you know, in the process.
I guess it was Marianne and Andy. And you're like, Andy had the highest rated episode of your fucking life. Sorry for the reference. like Survivor, this is the catalyst for the highest rated episode recently. Rizgod, you're in. You're like, what?
Well, so, yeah.
Over Charlie too, by the way. Charlie.
Wait, hold on. And if you're it's crazy that they actually are gonna have. They already have 3 winners on the season since Joe won last season, according to both of you. That's what.
Oh, I thought he was going to win.
I know you did. And Blake said, "What was it? What was the percentage, Blake?"
97.6 or something.
Real talk,
something like
most
that.
Most people, like I did polls leading up, most people's like 60-70% thought Joe was winning. It wasn't like it was just me and Blake.
We got to be the experts, Wes. Kyle had that thing in the bag. So I want to. Blake brings up Alex, right? And since we're talking about this, we don't need to, you know, Rizzo and Savannah, they're both going to be on. We can sell them and we'll see what happens. But Alex, who is a bust, according to Blake, not only does he have an idol, right? Not only is he in the most powerful position on the disaster tribe, which is normally a good place to be, wink, wink, Denise, what's up? He has 21 confessionals this season. He's the only one with double digits in both episodes. He leads the pack. He has 5 more than Jake. He has 8 more than Rizzo and Sophie, who are next. He has 10 more than Savannah. I know he's been on the tribe that's losing, but you, for all intents and purposes, if you're watching this season and you don't know Rizzo and Savannah are on the next season, you know who the main character of this season is? Alex. That's the main character so far. So I just have to push back a little bit there on Blake's, I don't think that Alex is proving me wrong. Alex is the star of the season at this point.
I don't. Yeah, that's why I'm maybe like, change the channel. Like, give me something else. Like,
I think Alex has been good.
He's, I don't know. I don't see him deep running this, but it is a, I came back from losing a Rizgod challenge that I shouldn't have never lost. And my entire tribe, without talking to me, put me in a dominant alliance position. Yeah, he's killing it. like that's, I could never pull that off in a million years.
I'm just surprised that in episode 2, we've already skunked 2 people with Jason and Christina. Both Yellow Tribe, mind you. MC's got like 3 confessionals in the Yellow Tribe. Yellow Tribe, just getting, the story is not really loving the Yellow Tribe.
Two, I don't know anything about is, Sophie done. At this point.
You're not winning.
Now, 24 confessionals total from the Yellow Tribe. Total from 6 people.
24 and Alex total. Has 21.
Alex has 21. Rizzo and Savannah combined have 24. And Jawan's right there with 10.
Right. Right. The Yellow Tribe is not important to the story. I'm not saying none of them make the post-merge. They're just not important to the overall story. They're the least important.
They currently make up 6 of the bottom 9 spots in terms of confessional count. And if you count Annie and Nicole in this, 1, 2, 3, 4 players on the Yellow Tribe have fewer confessionals than Annie and Nicole. Jesus. Steven is tied with Annie. The only other player who's down there with them, the Poop Queen.
Yeah.
Sage. That's it.
I knew that would happen. Okay, one thing about Alex. Why did he tell Annie about the idol? Like, is that he's just being mean as hell?
So she wouldn't play her shot in the dark. 100%.
But we don't. We didn't say the word shot in the dark at all.
That's right. Blake's right. So
what's the point of
sure.
But what's the point of doing that if we're not going to follow it out?
Why show it in the story if they're not even going to mention that's why he did it? I think it's what's really important here.
It's set up. I think that we're being set up for something with Alex and that idol and maybe either overplaying that idol or potentially trying to use it to his advantage and it not working. That's where I think that that's going. So yeah, I'm okay with Alex here doing this. It makes her so she doesn't play shot in the dark. They probably should have told us that in the story that was his reasoning, but I think that that's good. I think that that was smart. And you know what? Who cares how pissed Annie is at you as she's leaving? She doesn't have a vote to win anyway, so it doesn't matter.
I mean, what is, I thought that was a very interesting, like there's been some people on seasons that we've been rewatching that are delusional. How delusional was Annie where it's like, is it even fun to watch somebody be that wrong? Where it's like, we need you to work your way out of this of like, we got to vote out Jake. We got to vote out Jake. Jake pulled out that whole ladder by himself. I guess it's Sophie going. And you're like, mm-hmm. You couldn't even stick with your original story. Mm-hmm. So we could like latch on to that and like, okay, at least she's consistent if we need to switch. It's like, okay, get her out of here.
Can I bring up the skunk thing here? Because I agree with what you're saying here, Blake. I'm going to bring up the skunk thing here that Wes just brought up because I'm looking at 48, right? And 48 had some people who were incredibly underedited.
Joe Chris got a big ol' one.
He did, but that was also in his episode where he had the biggest moment of the new era. So right. I'm okay with
it. It's a death knell, though. The winner never gets 0.
It is.
Ever.
The winner since Erica, there has not been a winner who's had 0 in an episode. I think every winner since then has had at least one confessional in every episode. But here's my thing with the skunked. Through the first 2 episodes last season, 0 zeros. Third episode, we get 1 and it's Chrissy. Fourth episode, we get another 1 and it's Star. So it took them 4 episodes to give 2 zeros out. There were 2 zeros in this episode. Then in episode 5, it's Joe, which we already said kind of what the reason is there. Episode 6, nobody. Episode 7, Mary. It took them 7 episodes to get 4 people zeros. And one of those was when the guy was the star of the season and had emerged then as the star of the season. So very interesting. And maybe this is something that we should be looking at a little bit more. Maybe the Red Tribe, which is winning right now and doesn't need to be getting a lot of screen time, but they're still giving it to that tribe. Maybe that's why we're seeing a little bit more from them while Yellow is just getting totally overlooked. And that's the 50 effect in all of this.
I don't know. I really don't. Every time I see a zero, though, now I'm just like, last season I thought they were going to break it because you're right. The zero professional episode for Joe was the one that Survivor's like, this is our Emmy episode, as we saw them lose to the Traitors. But they're like, this is our Emmy. This is the Emmy episode. Look at them crying. Look at all the tears. Jeff's even crying. Zero professionals for Joe in that episode.
The so people voted.
I was like, I kind of brushed off. Like, it was such a big episode. Did they need a confessional? I was wrong. They did. For a winner, that is.
Yeah. I'm looking it up right now.
The people voting for Emmys were like, they didn't even interview that guy. This stuff sucks.
Yeah. The Emmys were ticked. They're like, and Joe didn't win, and they didn't give a confession. They're like, caring about the confessional counts when they vote. The Traitors always gives confessionals to everybody.
They're so known for even editing.
They're not, but at least everyone gets a confessional.
Erica was the last winner to get a goose. She was the last one. She had 3 episodes with the zero. Again, this is where I think they listened a little bit. Everybody complained. Gabler got a confessional in every episode, even when he was not relevant to the story. Marianne, yeah. Same thing. Jam Jam, D, every single one of them. And you go all the way back, Tommy only had 1 episode with a zero. You know, people overshadow Tommy because people always, Tommy's boring. I think Tommy's fine. I just think the season is what the season is. Tommy had only 1 episode without a confessional. Chris doesn't count.
Chris does not count, no.
Nick had a confessional in every episode, and Wendell had a bunch of goose eggs on his season. But
this
since
is crazy considering that was the Wendell and Dom show that season.
I know. But since season 41, you have to have a confessional in every episode. If you don't, you're immediately taken off my edge. Yeah. That's why with Joe last season, I kept saying, I'll give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here because he still was the star of that episode. But then as I started to watch the rest of the edit, I said, no, he's not winning. And if he was, they would have made even a bigger deal out of that in that episode. So, yeah, Jason and Christina, congratulations. You have not won Survivor 50 or 49, in case you didn't know.
Yeah, I think that would suck for them. You know, let's say they make the post merge, like I'd be like, man, they did it to me in episode 2. They couldn't give me anything.
Yeah.
Nothing.
But Sage pooped and peed and all that.
I swear. It is something where you're like, who is the target audience for Survivor? Like, gun to your head, Jeff Probst and the rest of the like, producing crew, executive producers, who are you trying to impress? Is it 18 to 35? Is it the whole family?
Like, something's been on fire, 8-year-olds.
Like, what are we doing? And
that's not a joke. Jeff said that.
Insane.
He thinks about 8-year-olds. That's what he said. I'm taking that. It sounds a little, but that's what he said. He's like, I'm thinking about 8-year-olds when I'm making Survivor. And I'm like, that's not who's, I mean, sure they're watching it, but 8-year-olds want to watch stuff that adults are watching.
Eight-year-olds can't even pay your bills, Jeff. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But I know that's not true because when we watch it live, there's not commercials for fruit roll-ups. Like, what are you talking about?
Jeff doesn't do a single ad break where he's talking to 8-year-olds. He says, if you want to apply, apply.
Yeah. He did want teenagers at one point, though, to apply, but that went away.
Yeah. Yeah. We have anything else on this episode? Or are you guys feeling good?
I'm feeling good. I could go on, but I'm feeling good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know where else we could go. So I'm feeling pretty good. I feel like we covered a lot.
It is weird also wanting more. I want more from certain contestants, but then there's some other contestants where I'm like, how is Shoe Bandit cooler than anything else? Like, is it casting that's bad? Are they not the interviewers bad this season? Like, how do we not have better content than Shoe Bandit Part 2?
I think Jake, when he's not talking about the Shoe Bandit, is fun, but the Shoe Bandit is weird.
Yeah.
The Shoe Bandit as an idea is fun. The execution is lame. The execution's lackluster. Like, put the shoe next to the Beware Vange box so that that person gets accused. That's Shoe Bandit, you know? Put it next to the box and then have that person be accused of having the idol. That's Shoe Bandit. Throw it in the ocean. Burn it in the fire pit. I don't know if that's allowed anymore. You know?
The one other thing, this is what I remember what I did not really enjoy about Alex on screen. It was his time to find the idol, and he goes, I have to carry this big ass ball and chain all around this island.
No,
and
it
literally shows Jake carrying it for him. And I'm like, how are we complaining about something we didn't even do? And like, it's too loud. Everybody's going to notice. You guys made sure to tell Jeremiah. And then I don't want my whole tribe to know. He literally walked over and told Annie himself.
Well, because at that point, everybody else knew.
Somebody might not know.
Yeah, like what?
Well, because Annie doesn't know that everybody else knows, yeah. And they all don't know that Annie knows. That's what that was.
But we never said the words shot in the dark. Did he say, it's time to play your shot in the dark?
Yeah, Jeff always says advantage, but. All right, Wes, what do you have going on?
Podcasts. I got two a week, one of winter analysis, one right after the episode where we talk about everything. But otherwise, man, I'm just like, I'm ready for 50. I'm ready for 50. And I'm hoping, I don't think it's the lesson will be learned. Hopefully someone who works in the show will learn we need more returnee seasons. Mm-hmm. Like 54 should be the latest for another returnee season. 51, 52 newbies, 54. I don't care if it's half and half. I don't care if we do Blood versus Water 3. I don't care. Returnees, because it draws interest when we know there are people coming back.
Poop,
I don't know
why. Poop versus pee.
And themes. The theme, there's a theme for 50. Don't stop that at 50. Do it for 51, 52. Like, please, 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 please.
What is our theme for 50 in the grand
scheme? In the hands of the fans.
Like,
but at least it's a theme. It's not great, but it's a theme.
Yeah, we can differentiate it from other seasons, so that's yes. Always good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Well, 50 is still 5 months away, so hold it together. But I do agree with you. Returning player seasons need to be a thing more often, for sure.
Yeah. For sure. Even if it's just half and half, like, why? Okay, why? This is not, there's no budgetary reason for this. Why can't we do Blood versus Water 3 with one world? Why can't we do that?
We literally talked about that.
Half returnees on one tribe, new ones on the other one, so we know who the returnees are. On one beach, there's no budgetary reason to not do that twist. That's a great twist.
Were you listening to our Patreon podcast that we recorded?
No,
today?
I've been saying
like
this for years.
Not even joking. We recorded it today.
Oh.
It doesn't come out until October 16th, and you just said exactly what we said when it was. How can they bring back Blood versus Water in this environment? Because you can't do men versus women.
Yeah,
and we said Blood versus Water would make sense because you know the returnees and you know who's not.
Yeah.
In the one world. Perfect. That's two podcasts, Survivor, that are saying to do this. I think that's a brilliant
There's no
idea.
Budgetary reason. It's not a budget thing. They can do it.
Yeah.
They can.
And it's actually cheaper because you're doing everything on one beach.
I find an idol. My loved one's going to tribal. I could give my idol to my loved one in their tribe as they go tribal. They come back from tribal. Their tribe's sitting there. Oh, my loved one got voted off. I'm PO'd. I might yell at their tribe. I might get mad at their tribe. We're all on one beach. There's no reason to not do this.
I can't.
Like, or you don't give your idol back to your mom. You say, "Bitch, fuck."
So you can vote her off.
That's Blake's version of Blood versus Water. He finally got back at his mom for 30 something years of hell.
No, I never said that. I just don't have a sister to say it.
I love that idea. I love that idea. All right, we gotta end this. Go make a petition to get season 54 to be Blood versus Water with the one world twist.
Or 52. They haven't done it yet. Why can't they do it?
Either way, I'm down. I think that's a great idea. Otherwise, thank you all so much for listening. Like this video, subscribe to the channel. Go check out Once Upon an Island's channel as well. Become a patron, patreon.com/specialist. If you want to hear us talk about some older seasons of Survivor, I did my after show that came out today. I'm doing some Australian Survivor stuff. We got casting. We got Rock Draw. We got so much content going on. Tonight, John and McKenna will be live doing Survivor Rewind. I think that's at 8:30. I could be wrong, but I know that they're doing it tonight. And then on Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, I will be live with Rachel Lamont for predictions and power rankings of episode number 3. And guess who else is joining us on that podcast? Jeff he is Probst. Sitting right to the side of me. It is Blake, who came out in episode one when we did the cast reaction and just roasted poor Rachel for no reason. Graphic designers are dumb. They have no reason to be on the show. All these nice things. And finally, Rachel, with her $1 million, is going to get to show up and put Blake in the place where he belonged. So make sure you tune in on Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern to see Blake squirm in his seat. It's going to be worth it. And then on Monday night, Tegwith will be live with Jacob Derwin from Ghost Island doing Matt Chat to get everybody excited for episode number 3. So thank you all so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will see you next time.
This episode sponsored by We Feed Raw. Have you ever actually looked at the label on your dog's food? Most dog food labels are a long list of things that don't look like food. Powders, starches, additives used to hold ultra-processed kibble together. At We Feed Raw, the label looks very different. High-quality meat, nutrient-rich organs, complete and balanced nutrition formulated by PhD nutrition experts. No fillers, no artificial preservatives, just real ingredients that support your dog's whole body health. That's why many pet parents see real changes after switching to We Feed Raw's fresh meals. If you want to feed your dog one of the healthiest diets possible, We Feed Raw makes it simple. Right now, new customers can get 40% off their starter box plus free shipping. Visit We Feed Raw at wefeedraw.com to get started today.